Next, Robin Halleck-Seely.
Good afternoon, Senator Johnson, Representative Kamiga, and members of the Marine Resources Committee. My name is Robin Hadlock-Seely. I'm a Mainer, born, raised, and educated here, who is a marine scientist with Cornell University. I teach in Maine at Cornell's Shoals Marine Laboratory on Appledore Island, and I live on Cobscote Bay much of the year. I'm here today also representing the Rockweed Coalition, a nonprofit all-volunteer group founded in 2008 and based in Washington County, whose mission is to end the large-scale commercial cutting of rockweed until there is scientific evidence that cutting rockweed is ecologically sustainable. We work to protect rockweed as critical habitat for commercial fisheries and wildlife. You have a copy of my testimony. I'm going to skip through it in the interest of time because you've heard a lot of these things before. One thing I want to emphasize is that rockweed makes up 90 to 95% of Maine seaweed landings in any particular year. The Rockweed Coalition is not, I repeat, not on a campaign to stop the 5 to 10% of Maine's other seaweed landings that are collected by small companies for the health food market. Our focus is the approximately 15 million pounds of fisheries habitat in Maine, rockweed, that is being removed at 4 cents a pound to be made into agricultural fertilizer or cattle feed supplements. When I came before you in January of this year, I presented information on the ecological role and importance of rockweed to our fisheries, and perhaps you get a chance to review that. Yes, there is in the literature that the rockweed plants can be truly ancient, up to 400 years old, and I'm happy to supply those references to anybody who wants them. In 2009, I came before this committee to support a moratorium on further rockweed cutting until we know how much rockweed we can take without adverse impacts to fisheries and the ecosystem on which much of our coastal economy is based. And I want to emphasize, we still do not know the answer to that question. I still support a moratorium on rockweed cutting in Cobscote Bay until we know the answer. Furthermore, based on the damage to rockweed habitat from machine harvesters that I documented in 2012, which is the subject of a report that's in the packet, and based on the testimony from Canadian scientists specifically on machine harvesting, I support a complete ban on mechanical harvesting in Cobscote Bay. You have heard that support for a moratorium on rockweed harvesting in Cobscote Bay and against the repeal of the Cobscote Rockweed Management Law is both broad and deep, especially in Washington County. The law that created the Cobscote Bay Rockweed Management Area was a compromise, a well-worked-out, hard-fought compromise between those who wanted a complete moratorium and those who wanted to harvest without limit. Please consider that no intertidal commercial seaweed cutting is allowed in Oregon or Washington or New Hampshire, and commercial removal of a rockweed relative in the southeastern U.S. called sargassum has been severely restricted because of its role as fisheries habitat. The Cobscote Bay Rockweed Management Area Law contains several common sense limits on cutting rockweed, such as protecting conservation areas as no-cut areas, limiting the cutting to 17%, etc. In your packet, you will find letters from Dr. David Garbery, Dr. Boris Worm, and Dr. Heike Lotze. Drs. Garbery, Worm, and Lotze are Canadian biologists based in Nova Scotia. And to quote directly from their letters, "The research that we have done suggests there is no safe cutting height for rockweed. Whatever harm in biomass removal is being done by the immediate harvest of the vegetative biomass, the impact is multiplied several times by the annual detrital input that would have occurred from the input of the shed reproductive tissue." And I'm amazed to find that mechanical harvesters are being used in Maine. They were banned in Canada over 20 years ago because of the extremely poor recovery of rockweed beds following the harvest. In my report on the 2012 season of machine cutting of rockweed in Cobscote Bay, you will see photos of ledge areas that were completely denuded of rockweed last summer. These areas that were bare last summer are now being filled in with other species of seaweed, such as green algae and new growth of another species called fucus. Based on published data from Maine, these areas will take 12 to 18 years to recover to the rockweed habitat they had before machine cutting. Machine cutting of rockweed in Cobscote Bay is an assault on the intertidal zone, and it needs to stop. If the Cobscote Bay Rockweed Management Area has not been as effective as it could be, it's because the provisions of the law worked out in this committee 4 years ago are not being well enforced. And in my report, I highlight each area of the 2009 law that's not being enforced, as well as the DMR rule on leaving 16 inches that's also not being enforced. The intent of the legislature to help manage the rockweed cutting in Cobbs Cook Bay is being frustrated by a lack of enforcement. I can't state it any more clearly than that. You may hear that rockweed harvesting is sustainable. Actually, we don't know the level of cutting that is sustainable. There's no data showing us what level of cutting can occur without impacts to fisheries and wildlife. You may hear that Cobbs Cook Bay is not that special and does not deserve special treatment by having its own management area, but that's incorrect, and I've included in your packet literature that talks about how unique and special Cobbs Cook Bay is as an area of high productivity and a biological diversity hotspot. Cobbs Cook Bay is an area of statewide ecological significance for its significant and essential wildlife habitat, and up to 25% of the state's black duck populations who rely on rockweed in the winter can be found in Cobbs Cook Bay. You may hear that rockweed grows right back after cutting, but it grows slowly, 3 to 16 centimeters a year, and if ledges are denuded, it can take 12 to 18 years for the habitat to recover. And what happens if the biomass is cut repeatedly? What is that doing to the three-dimensional tall rockweed habitat forming a protective canopy? If a patch of terrestrial forest is clear-cut, the wood biomass will eventually return, but in what form? Will the forest birds nest in biomass? And finally, you have heard in a maligned paper, Seeley and Schlesinger, I happen to be a senior author on that paper, that lobsters don't actually spend any time in rockweed, but they do, and I have the films to show it. And in 2009, Dr. Diane Cowan, who's executive director of the Lobster Conservancy, who's not here today but was there in 2009, spoke on the fact that her juvenile lobster nurseries are in many cases in intertidal areas under boulders covered by rockweed. Just because you haven't seen lobsters in rockweed doesn't mean they're not there. And finally, you may hear that cutting rockweed is a fishery. It ain't. No more than logging the forest is the same as a deer hunt. In Maine, we have a forestry department and we have a Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. This is for good reason. Plants and animals are different in their biology and need to be managed very differently. If you start out the process of managing rockweed by calling it a fish, then you're already on the wrong foot and your management is headed for failure at the outset. So there should be a moratorium on rockweed cutting, especially by machine in Cobbs Cook Bay, but at very least this committee should make sure that the Cobbs Cook Bay rockweed management area is not repealed. We need that law to be enforced and maintained at a minimum. We can't hack away at the base of the food web and expect to recover our fisheries and the economic and social health of our Washington County communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions. So one of the things that you said early on, you don't oppose some of the harvesting seaweed and you do other. Can you give me a distinction why? Because what you've communicated at the end of this is that you feel that there shouldn't be any harvesting because it disrupts habitat. And yet you said earlier that some harvesting of seaweed is okay. Can you explain to me how you differentiate what's acceptable and what's not acceptable?
We're only focused on rockweed because it's an old species, a long-lived species, an ancient species, and it forms habitat. There are other species that are very different, like sea lettuce and dulse, that are not as complex, they're not as tall, they don't have a canopy, they don't form habitat that's used in the same way as rockweed. So rockweed is really in a class by itself. And that's why the Rockweed Coalition is focused on rockweed and not these other species.
So you're suggesting that kelp doesn't provide habitat as well? I mean, that's certainly another harvested type of seaweed.
Yes, but rockweed is 99 to 95% of what's being harvested, so that's where our attention is. I don't know as much about the kelp harvest. It's not harvested in amount nearly as much as rockweed.
Right.
But it is certainly another habitat-forming species, you're right.
So you talked about denuding ledge, and it sounds to me like that's not a management policy issue. That's an enforcement issue.
Certainly.
And a number of the things people have said here are around enforcement and the need to have that. So if you take out of it for a moment, the practices that are not supposed to be permitted by what we have for management in Cobscook. How do we determine which of the problems you're describing, because it sounds like many or most of them relate to someone removing anchors or denuding, as you describe it, ledge, so that there is a very long period of recovery. How do we determine what amount of that impact is from people not adhering to the plan in their practices, and differentiate what the impact is on, you know, whether the ducks are there, for instance, as to whether it's because management plan was adhered to and you consider it insufficient, or if it's because the plan was not adhered to?
The problem is, in Cobscook Bay, the enforcement has never kept up with the intent of the Cobscook Bay Rockweed Management Area. So we don't really know. But there should be money for research, you know, in this management plan, so that we can separate out those two things.
See, I think we have some research from Dr. Brian Beal about recovery and what the sampling of, you know, the species that utilize that habitat were as well, in terms of the recovery of their populations in time. Do you have any other data that would be different from his observations?
There's lots of published reports of recovery. I think at last count it was like 50 papers or 40 papers on regrowth of rockweed, depending, and it varies depending where you are in the intertidal. It depends, you know, it's very rockweed bed specific, recovery is. And so that's one of the cautions I have about a statewide management plan is, I think it was Jill Fegley from University of Maine who said in her thesis that it's almost as if you should manage it on a bed-by-bed basis, because the characteristics of the rockweed beds are so different. Dr. Beal did his study in Jonesport, and I'm not familiar with Jonesport. I do my work in Cobscook Bay and Casco Bay. But also, Dr. Beal looked at biomass and not habitat structure. So mostly when people talk about sustainability, they're talking about counting the, you know, measuring the biomass that's coming back. Our concern is more for the three-dimensional habitat. So that's why I made that forest analogy. So you can, for example, cut down a maple tree and the birds fly away and the sprouts will come up from the stump and eventually you get back to the same amount of biomass. But was it, did it form the same habitat structure that was there in the first place, and are the birds going to nest in it?
Yeah, that's an interesting challenge. I think we would need more science in order to answer what all the various aspects of that are, but I do recall from work at the Moosehorn National Wildlife Refuge in my high school days that we were specifically clearing strips of trees because there wasn't enough low growth to support woodcock nesting areas, which was native to the area, but it was all grown up and there weren't any sufficient nesting areas. So, I mean, it's a complex issue, and there are different species that may do best under those circumstances, and this kind of thing I think we need to understand better.
Yes.
Thank you.
For sure.
Representative Dickerson.
Thank you. I'm wondering, is there a link in your testimony somewhere to the video that you were talking about showing lobster in the rockweed?
No, but I can provide it for you.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Representative Chapman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you have any information on the amount of rockweed that's lost to being washed up relative to the amount that's growing. That is to say, what's the cull rate of storms or whatever it is that pulls it up?
There is published data on that. I don't have the figures at the top of my memory on that. But the point is that the stuff that's being washed up is not being wasted. That's part of the natural cycle. It breaks down, turns into detritus and goes back and feeds the ocean. It's not like the stuff that washes up is being wasted because it's not being picked up by harvesters and turned into products.
Representative Devin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Seeley, When you talk about grow slowly, 3 to 16 centimeters per year, mm-hmm. And you express frustration, or you commented, Dr. Beal, he actually talked about biomass.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about three-dimensionality. It's too bad that we're not talking a single language here. But where did you come up with that 3 to 16 centimeters per year? Is that measurements?
That's a range. That's the slowest growth rate and the fastest growth
sure.
rate that I could find in the literature.
And you said there's like over 50 papers on the growth of rockweed. Is there a review paper or something that you can offer us that, you know, we could get a little bit of information out quickly?
Well, Celia Schlesinger, 2012, I could recommend.
Okay.
But I also have a database of papers on that topic, which I'd be happy to share with you.
So there are numerous rockweed species around the world. And I'm a little bit hung up on this 400-year-old holdfast.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Cobbs Cook Bay, which has got is a lot of energy involved
mm-hmm.
there, you know, and so things are changing fairly rapidly on a very short time cycle, you know, every 6 hours, and so and you know, along with that change and the tremendous nutrient input. You have this biodiversity, and so it doesn't make sense that the holdfast would last 400 years. You know what I'm saying?
I wasn't saying that it was my study. It's published data from other scientists who have studied it.
And they have looked at holdfast, rockweed holdfast in Cobbs Cook Bay.
No. This is
so we could be comparing a sumac tree to a redwood. No, it's an important point. I'm trying to figure out if we.
Would you like me to provide you with the paper that?
Yeah, I would, because we could be comparing two different species that are not.
No, they're not two different species. It's the same species.
Okay. Well, I look forward to receiving it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?